Chapter 9. International dismay with the variant of capitalism produced by low-quality American democracy. England is being shown a thing or two by its German rivals about fostering young talent, learning from mistakes and planning for the long term. The ascent, on and off the pitch, has not been lost on UK observers, with policymakers across the political spectrum looking to Germany for economic inspiration. Chris Bryant, Brian Groom, Michael Steen, and James Wilson, Financial Times, May 2013. The United States, by many of the standard indicators of inequality, is now the most unequal long-standing democracy in a developed country in the world. Alfred Stepan and Juan Lintz, Perspective on Politics, December 2011. Amazon is an exemplar of American-style capitalism, seizing market share in America and Europe in numerous business lines. Its profits are built on process and product innovation, but also on vigorous wage suppression. The lack of voter sovereignty in America permits it to pursue practices that are forbidden to competitors in higher-quality democracies. At home, it exploits loopholes in labor laws first opened by the Reagan administration to commoditize its workforce, combining weak wages, paltry benefits, and low job security with manifest hostility to labor unions and collective bargaining. An investigation by the New York Times in 2015 highlighted Amazon's bruising worksite culture, centered on generating workplace stress, with supervisors encouraging conflict and peer criticism between workers to spur more innovation. Amazon lugs this same culture overseas wherever it can. The sharp contrast of its practices with those of firms in higher quality democracies engenders resentment abroad from even surprising quarters. For instance, Amazon is a large employer in the former coal mining town of Rugeley in Staffordshire, England. It was a dying town that initially heartily welcomed the new mail-order jobs. The district council's economic development manager, Glenn Watson, has since become dismayed by Amazon's culture. "They're not seen as a good employer. Our definition of a good employer is someone who takes on people and provides them with sustainable employment week in, week out, not somebody who takes on workers one week and gets rid of them the next. We had no idea Amazon was going to be as indifferent to these issues as they have been. It's come as a shock to us how intransigent they are." The treatment of employees by Amazon in Germany is similar. Amazon provides its German employees with scant benefits and a pay scale that's 25% below prevailing employer-employee agreements for similar mail-order work. And to keep it that way, Amazon relentlessly fights German unions seeking to organize its employees. That stonewalling also enables it to install U.S.-style gig employment practices, including reliance on low-paid, insecure temp jobs, as in Rugeley. The temporary employee share of Amazon's German workforce is double that at competitors such as Otto or Hermes Fulfillment. Nor is Amazon an exception. Other nameplate firms like Apple and Honeywell also pursue the same strategy of suppressing wages and resisting collective bargaining. In Australia in 2016, for example, Coca-Cola incited a nationwide boycott with plans to cut wages for its 56 higher-wage employees at its Abbotsford facility. The plans were withdrawn, but Coca-Cola did not learn a lesson. In 2017, Coca-Cola promised a hefty immediate retirement bonus if senior workers at its Richlands, Australia bottling facility agreed to weaker rules and double-digit wage cuts for junior colleagues, a tactic one labor leader termed a real mate-against-mate scenario. "They're trying to get rid of an existing workforce, as at Abbotsford, and hire people to do the same job at a hell of a lot less pay. They're going to cop a huge decrease in earnings over their lifetime." American multinationals like Amazon and Coca-Cola despise the high-wage and collaborative stakeholder capitalism in the higher-quality democracies of Australia, Canada, and much of Europe. Yet in order to gain access to the richest consumer markets on earth, they have been forced to reach some accommodation with the European middle-class economic model. Across the EU, for example, there are more than 1,050 domestic and foreign firms with works councils covering 19 million employees. Recall that works councils are labor management committees that substitute for what would be mid-management in U.S. firms. Some 171 of these firms are U.S. multinationals, because any non-European firm with more than 150 employees in two or more EU nations must establish works councils. It has been a positive experience, with many American managers proving able to operate profitably in the EU high-wage environment where collaboration between workers and management is the norm. Works councils cannot dictate pay or avoid job layoffs, but as a former UK Minister for Europe explains, they are an important mechanism for workers employed by the same firm to keep in touch and for the senior managers to hear about and try and resolve problems before they turn conflictual. U.S. firms have proven far more hostile to the concept of co-determination, commonplace among all large firms in 19 nations of the EU. By law, corporate boards of directors at larger firms in these nations must include employee representatives. One half of the directors at every German firm you can name, for instance, are elected by employees, while the other half are elected by shareholders. This collaboration by employees and employers is more than 50 years old. It has a stabilizing influence and accounts for the longer-term business horizon and superior investment performance of European firms compared to their U.S. competitors. It explains why job offshoring is rare in Europe, as noted earlier, and why rising real wages, sound benefits, employee upskilling, and secure retirements are common. Employees in nations like Denmark, France, and Germany earn more per hour, with wages broadly set through collective bargaining. That's why they have enjoyed real wage gains since 1981 that vastly exceed the gains made by 95% of U.S. employees. And recall that more of them work than in America. High wages, no employee subsidies. The higher wages, greater economic mobility, and superior living standards compared to the United States reflect the higher quality of democracy in Northern Europe. European voters demand that firms pay well enough to avoid taxpayers having to subsidize their employees. In contrast, the U.S. Congress pays little heed to middle-class concerns or rising wages, more focused on the agenda of the fittest 50. They enhance profits by permitting firms to pay unduly low wages, insisting that taxpayers make up the difference by funding food stamps, Medicaid, and the like used by their poorly paid employees. The consequence is that wages at the largest U.S. employers, such as fast food firms or Walmart, are so low that hundreds of thousands of their employees routinely rely on public assistance. Economists have concluded that taxpayers provide nearly $7 billion in food stamps, Medicaid, children's health insurance, and other income supplements for fast food employees. Data on Walmart is rare, but equally revealing. Some 15,246 Walmart employees in Ohio, for example, during 2009 relied on Medicaid, and 12,731 utilized food stamps. And Walmart employees in Wisconsin receive more than $5,800 apiece annually in taxpayer-funded Medicaid benefits, according to Businessweek. Overall, Americans for Tax Fairness found that Walmart employees receive as much as $6.2 billion in taxpayer funds annually for food, health, and other low-income supports. Too many of the fittest 50 believe that too much is never enough, exemplified by the four major Walton heirs. Their fortunes rose by $20.9 billion between March 2014 and March 2015. For one half that amount, each Walmart employee could have received a $5 per hour raise, ending all taxpayer subsidies. Foreign distrust of American enterprises. Informed by the practices of homegrown firms, Exposure to the practices commonplace with American multinationals have caused Canadians and Europeans to grow wary, viewing them with nearly the same trepidation they reserve for Chinese firms. The reputation of American firms abroad reflects the antics of firms such as Amazon, but also lingering memories of practices at U.S. firms like Walmart before it abandoned the German market a decade or so ago. Walmart departed in disgrace for encouraging employees at its 85 stores to eavesdrop on one another, their policy reminiscent of Soviet and fascist regimes from recent history. In combination with Walmart's attempts to undercut the German wage structure, such antics proved simply too much for continental consumers. They shopped at competitors they considered better corporate citizens. The poor reputation of American-style capitalism in Europe also reflects behavior like that of the U.S. auto firm Molex. It closed its factory in Villemur-sur-Tarn, Haute-Garonne, in October 2009, leaving unpaid about 4 million euros, $4.4 million in wages to its nearly 300 French employees. Not only did it embarrassingly haul away valuable equipment in the middle of the night, Molex subsequently reported record profits, including paying out a 14% dividend. Bitterness and recriminations have also followed the takeover of local enterprises abroad by U.S. firms. Eager to acquire cutting-edge railway locomotion technology, for example, Caterpillar purchased Electromotive Canada from General Motors in 2010. GM had paid Canadian-scale wages in line with European wages at Electromotive that were well above U.S. wages. Caterpillar's takeover calculations included reaping savings with large wage cutbacks to U.S. levels. Despite record profits in 2011, Caterpillar demanded significant wage concessions from its new Canadian employees soon after the purchase. In the common American style, its demands featured a threat to close Electromotive and transfer its technology to a plant in a lower-wage country, Muncie, Indiana, in this instance. Canadian employees resisted, and Caterpillar promptly closed the plant. Also, in the usual American style, Caterpillar demanded that fired Canadian employees first train their foreign, American, low-wage replacements. Rachel Mendelson of Huffington Post Canada explained Caterpillar's tactics this way. Contract talks broke down after union leaders refused a deal that would have cut benefits and slashed wages by more than half, from $35 to $16.50 per hour, giving rise to rumors that the company was planning to shift operations to a newly opened plant in Muncie, Indiana, where workers are paid between $12 and $18 an hour. Many U.S. multinationals are innovative, some remarkably so, but virtually all behave like the blue-chip firms Amazon, Caterpillar, and Coca-Cola. They dodge regulations, provide extravagant executive compensation too often delinked from performance, are serial practitioners of the independent contractor and gig employment scams to lower wages, buy votes in Congress and the courts with donations, are serial tax dodgers utilizing foreign tax havens, are chronic exporters of high-value jobs, and strongly resist collective bargaining to suppress wages and spike profits. Foreign observers have tumbled to these pathologies and logically have come to distrust American firms. Evidence comes from an expansive database compiled by the Edelman Public Relations firm. As an occasional element of its annual surveys, it garners opinion toward American firms by informed citizens in Northern Europe, Canada, and elsewhere. Respondents are described by the Financial Times as well-educated, highly paid, and engaged 25 to 64-year-olds. The surveys reveal that U.S. companies have a trust deficit in Europe. In a detailed 2006 Edelman survey, for example, reproduced as Chart 9.1, about 70% of elite Germans trusted the management and boards of German or Canadian firms to do the right thing by sharing their prosperity with employees and customers. Only 41% had the same trust in leadership of American firms. Indeed, the behavior of American management is viewed with only slightly more favor than that anticipated from the owners of Chinese firms. American firms were consistently ranked as markedly less trustworthy than either Canadian firms or indigenous firms by elites in Canada, France, Germany, and the United Kingdom. The trust deficit documented in Chart 9.1 also applied to specific iconic American firms. The 2006 Edelman survey found that its European respondents had a significant trust deficit with major U.S. corporations such as Coca-Cola, General Electric, Johnson & Johnson, McDonald's, and Starbucks. That distrust means foreign observers view these firms considerably less favorably than do Americans themselves. Some 65% of American participants in the survey viewed Coca-Cola as trustworthy, for example, while only 41% of European respondents did so. See Chart 9.2. The marks for McDonald's were particularly low. As Professor Tony Royal at the National University of Ireland explains, its outlets in Europe have become notorious for resisting collective bargaining, violating wage standards, manipulating low-wage programs intended solely for trainees, and ignoring labor regulations. Like Amazon or Walmart, that firm is determined to exploit loopholes to pay American-style wages rather than hire European ones. Jaundiced sentiment about American business practices based on unfavorable comparisons with domestic firms is pervasive in other wealthy democracies, including Canada. The prospect of a takeover of local firms by American ones is thus viewed with alarm. The 2006 Edelman survey included questions on the extent of unease should American, European, Chinese, South Korean, or Indian firms seek to acquire local firms. The degree of dismay at the prospect of U.S. takeovers was dramatically worse than for firms from any other wealthy democracy, including Japanese firms. Only potential takeovers by Chinese firms were viewed with more concern. See Chart 9.3. Indeed, respondents in Canada, Germany, the United Kingdom, and France viewed American takeovers with more mistrust than they did takeovers by firms from India. They prefer local firms being taken over by Indian corporations than by American corporations. Overall, among Germans, the intensity of dismay should U.S. firms buy out German firms was a stunning 22 times greater than for Japanese takeovers, and 5 to 7 times greater than for takeovers by firms from their historic adversaries in France or Britain. Europeans are decidedly unimpressed with the wages, job security, and other labor practices of U.S. firms chiseled by Ronald Reagan and Ayn Rand onto tablets atop Mont Pelerin. When asked if Europe's economy should be more like that of the United States in a Financial Times Harris poll in September 2007, 78% of Germans and 73% of French respondents replied no.